You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
And I'm Carolyn Nelson.
And, ladies and gentlemen, we've got quite a bit of information to give you tonight. An awful lot, in fact. And you'd better have pen and paper ready. Don't go anywhere. Now, don't call us tomorrow and say, I didn't have a pen and paper and I didn't write this down. Because you know what we think about that. Get your pen and paper now and be ready, folks. Master Armorer of the Militia of the State of Arizona. Sergeant Selby, stand to attention. We are gathered here today, ladies and gentlemen, to honor the birthday of the Master Armorer of the Militia of the Great State of Arizona, the inventor of the long-range rifle.
Happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you, happy birthday dear God, happy birthday to you.
And many more.
You can hit him with a pie now, Elaine. Happy birthday, my good friend. Let me see here. Here we go. Another prediction made by me has come true. Mary Hart, on May the 13th, on Entertainment Tonight, announced the first televised execution will be held June 17th, nationwide. I predicted that in the New World Order, executions will be public and will be televised. Montana, the Brady Law's requirement that local law enforcement officials run background checks on anyone wanting to buy a firearm is unconstitutional. A federal judge ruled Monday. This appeared in the LA Times, May the 17th, 1994. Department of the Treasury, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, Washington, D.C., 20226. Memorandum not for public disclosure. To all special agents in charge, all division chiefs, Chief ATF National Academy, from Chief Firearms Division. Subject, gun show survey. Recently, ATF was directed by the Assistant Secretary Enforcement to conduct a thorough analysis of the scope and magnitude of gun shows as a source of firearms to the black market, violent criminals, and gun traffickers. Additionally, the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act is expected to increase the number of non-licensed participants at gun shows. Violations at gun shows can be expected to correspondingly increase. As a result, the Firearms Division recently completed a pilot survey of a gun show for the purpose of developing standards for subsequent surveys. In furtherance of the Assistant Secretary's directive, each field division is instructed to conduct a minimum of 2 gun show surveys within their respective areas, commencing on or about April 1, 1994. Additional surveys may be conducted by the field divisions at the discretion of the senior agent in charge. The survey results should be forwarded to the Firearms Division by July 15, 1994, utilizing the attached form. The form contains items of suggested consideration following each survey area. These items are intended only as a guide to ensure that each field division collects information in a similar manner. Response should be brief and are required only for the lettered items. Space has been provided for narrative comments. A separate response should be submitted for each surveyed gun show. The survey should be conducted in a covert manner in order to observe the greatest number of violations. Dealers and other participants should be engaged in conversation as appropriate in order to identify violations, as well as the license status of dealers. The data should be collected by observing activities both inside and outside the gun shows. While it may not be possible to make conclusive determinations for each survey item, in effect, number of criminal violations, it is necessary that the data be collected as accurately as possible. The surveys should be conducted jointly with compliance operations. Law enforcement and compliance operations responsibilities may be assigned as the field divisions deem appropriate. However, a suggested division of responsibilities is included as part of the survey form. Consideration should be given to utilizing state and local law enforcement personnel for the purpose of identifying state and/or municipal violations of law. Procedures for initiating enforcement action with regard to flagrant violations observed during the course of the surveys should be included as part of the gun show survey plan. The enforcement plan should not compromise the survey operation. The data collected during the surveys will be used to revise enforcement and compliance strategies, as well as to make recommendations regarding legislative and regulatory changes. Suggestions and comments by the field divisions regarding gun show enforcement strategies and legislative recommendations are encouraged. A list of gun shows is attached to assist you in scheduling your surveys. A notice to dealers regarding permissible gun show activities is also attached. Questions regarding the surveys should be directed to Special Agent Ray Rowley. Write this number down and tell Special Agent Ray Rowley exactly what you think of this Constitution-destroying scumbag. Questions regarding the surveys should be directed to Special Agent Ray Rowley, Firearms Enforcement Branch. Telephone number, area code 202-927-7770. That's area code 202-927-7770. Once again, for you slow folks, area code 202-927-7770. This memorandum is signed by Andrew L. Vita. Gun show survey draft. A. Name, location, and date of gun show. B. Number of tables at gun show. C. Estimate of attendance. D. Estimate of profitability. Estimate of profitability. D1. Cost per table. D2. Admission price. D3. Fees charged promoter. E. Number of FFLs present. 1, display of license. 2, preparation of 4473s and our required state forms. 3, business cards. 4, acceptance of credit cards. F, number of out-of-state FFLs. F1, out-of-state license plates in the area where displayers enter the gun show. F2, addresses appearing on licenses and business cards. F3, dealers only displaying firearms. G, number of non-FFLs in need of a license. G1, sales, orders for handguns, particularly inexpensive handguns. G2, evidence of reoccurring sales and orders. G3, other evidence that firearms are not part of a collection. H, number of non-FFLs and collectors present. H1, absence of items listed in E. H2, sales of personal collections. H3, antiques. H4, non-compliance with waiting period. I, number of vendors not selling firearms or firearms parts. J, number of Brady Bill violations observed. J1, failure to observe waiting period. K, number of straw purchases observed. L, number and type of other violations observed. L1, failure to display license. L2, failure to prepare paperwork. L3, sales to non-residents, prohibited persons. L4, transactions by out-of-state FFLs. L5, transactions from vehicles or in parking lots. L6, unlawful weapons. L7, state violations. K, number of dealers selling assault-type firearms and military parts. K1, illegal MAC-90s. And then, overall impression of gun show and comments. Since when did they start spying on American citizens in this country, ladies and gentlemen? And since when do they care what the profitability is in a legal marketplace? Call this scumbag. And you can tell him I said he's a scumbag if you want. And you can give him my phone number. I'll tell him again, and I'm going to tell him in my own call. Area code 202-927-7770. Agent Ray Rowley, Firearms Enforcement Branch. Scumbag. Extraordinaire. Destroyer of the Constitution of the United States of America. Works for the International Monetary Fund through the Treasury Department, not the United States Treasury. He is, in fact, an enforcement agent of the United Nations, one world government. Scumbag. Extraordinaire. Somebody, everybody, when you call, read to this scumbag the second article in amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America and tell him that under the law you are a member of the militia of your state. And any registration, legislation, laws limiting or restricting the ownership of firearms are unconstitutional and illegal, and under the ruling of the Supreme Court are thereby null and void. Null and void, ladies and gentlemen. And if you don't understand that, you weren't listening to this broadcast last night.
One more time.
American music. I'm going to continue with the rulings of Supreme Court that say that the right to labor is a fundamental right. And I quote, included in the right of personal liberty and the right of private property, partaking of the nature of each is the right to make contracts for the acquisition of property. Chief among such contracts is that of personal employment, by which labor and other services are exchanged for money and other forms of property, unquote. Copage versus Kansas, 236, United States Supreme Court, ruling 1 at 14. Quote, the term liberty denotes not merely freedom from bodily restraint, but also the right of the individual to contract, to engage in any of the common occupations of life, to acquire useful knowledge, to marry, to establish a home and bring up children, to worship God according to the dictates of his or her own conscience. The established doctrine is that this liberty may not be interfered with under the guise of protecting public interest by legislative action, unquote. Meyer versus Nebraska, 262, United States Supreme Court decision, 390, 399, and 400. And yes, that also means marriage licenses, driver's licenses, business licenses, dog licenses, etc., are voluntary for American citizens. Remember, the Internal Revenue Code confirms that compensation earned through the exercise of a fundamental right is not taxable. Again, the Code of Federal Regulations is explicit. 1939, 26 CFR, Section 9.22B, 1, quote, exemptions, exclusions from gross income, certain items of income specified in Section 22B, in effect compensation, are exempt from tax and may be excluded from gross income. 1. Those items of income which are under the Constitution not taxable by the federal government, unquote. Treasury Decision, Internal Revenue, Volume 26, Number 3640, page 769, 1924, quote, gross income excludes the items of income specifically exempted by statute or fundamental law free from tax, unquote. Title 26, 1939, Part 2, Subtitle B, Section 3.21-1. Quote, meaning of net income. The tax imposed by Title 26 of the Act is upon income. Neither income exempted by statute or fundamental law, nor expenses incurred in connection therewith, other than interest, enter into the computation of net income. Unquote. 11. American Jurisprudence, Constitutional Law, Section 328, page 1131-1133. Describes the, quote, fundamental principles, unquote, upon which the political institutions and the social structure of America rest, is that all men have certain rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which are unalienable, fundamental, and inherent. These are real rights and not mere privileges enjoyable only through grace. Every man has a natural, fundamental right to the fruits of his own industry, unquote. Therefore, our rights have the following attributes. 1. They are unalienable. 2. They are fundamental. And 3. They are inherent. Webster's Dictionary defines those qualities as follows. Unalienable, not transferable to another, and not capable of being repudiated, overturned, or denied. Fundamental, an essential part of the foundation, the primary source, a basic principle, rule, or law that serves as the groundwork of a system. Inherent, existing in someone as a permanent and inseparable element, quality, or attribute, innate. And innate, existing in one from birth, inborn, ladies and gentlemen. Yakus versus the United States, 321, United States Supreme Court ruling, 414, page 468, 1944, says, and I quote, but whenever the judicial power is called into play, it is responsible directly to the fundamental law, and no other authority can intervene or force or authorize the judicial body to disregard it, unquote. Hang your heads in shame. Insofar as a statue runs counter to the fundamental law of the land, it is superseded thereby. 16 American Jurisprudence, 2nd, section 177. Are you beginning to understand why I made the statement on several episodes of The Hour of the Time that when you hire an attorney, you have screwed yourself royal? They know these things, but they don't tell you. You are responsible, and only you may claim your rights. When you hire an attorney, you have declared yourself legally incompetent and become a ward of the court. And the attorney is a sworn officer of the court, vesting his interest or her interest in the interests of the court and of the state, and not in your interest whatsoever. And I know that there are some attorneys out there who are patriots, who are shivering when I say this. It is not a personal attack upon you. It's a wake-up call. Section 128, IRC, Title 26, USCA, Recovery of Unconstitutional Federal Taxes. Quote, income excluding interest attributable to a tax imposed by the United States which has been held unconstitutional may be excluded from gross income, unquote. Pollock versus Farmers Loan and Trust Company, 158, United States Supreme Court Decision 601 at 637, 1895, said this, and I quote, thus, in the matter of taxation, the Constitution recognizes the two great classes of direct and indirect taxes and lays down two rules by which their imposition must be governed, namely, the rule of apportionment as to direct taxes, and the rule of uniformity as to duties, imposts, and excises, unquote. Quote, direct taxes bear immediately upon persons, upon possessions, and enjoyments of rights. Indirect taxes are levied upon the happening of an event or an exchange, unquote. Knowlton versus Moore, 178, U.S. Supreme Court ruling, 41. Quote, a tax laid upon the happening of an event is distinguished from its tangible fruits is an indirect tax, unquote. Tyler versus United States, 497 at page 502, 1930. Quote, a tax levied upon property because of its ownership is a direct tax, whereas one levied upon property because of its use is an excise, duty, or impost, unquote. Manufacturers Trust Company versus the United States, 32F, Supplement 289. Now I'm going to tell you the authorities for direct taxation by Congress. Listen carefully. If you have a copy of the Constitution, I suggest you read it tonight thoroughly before you go to bed. Article 1, Section 2, Clause 3, United States Constitution. Quote, representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states which may be included within this union according to their respective numbers, unquote. Article 1, Section 9, Clause 4, quote, no capitation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration herein before directed to be taken, unquote. A portion, ladies and gentlemen, means to distribute or allocate proportionately. Webster's College Dictionary. For example, if you apportioned a $100 gift contribution between five friends, each would pay their proportionate $20 share. Anything else would not be right. Capitation tax means, according to the Law Dictionary, a tax imposed upon a person at a fixed rate, regardless of the taxpayer's ability to pay, occupation, assets, or income, unquote. So the concept of apportionment is based upon America's founding principle of equality under the law. Apportionment means that if you pay $100 a year in taxes, I also pay $100 a year in taxes. To be lawful, federal direct taxes on property, including real and personal property, must be equally apportioned. You see, I don't file and I don't pay this illegal tax. and they don't come after me because I can kick their ass in court, and I can prove that they are traitors engaged in destroying this country, and that everything that they do is illegal and unconstitutional, and they don't want that on a court record. They go after you, the sheeple, who shiver in your shoes when you just see the return address on an envelope that says Internal Revenue Service. It is a private corporation. You can tell simply by looking at the upper right-hand corner of the unopened envelope on the address side. You see, an agency of the federal government has franking privileges, ladies and gentlemen. But all IRS correspondence addressed to you will either have a stamp placed upon it or will be metered mail for which they pay postage. When are you going to wake up? I hope it won't be too late by the time that you do. I sincerely hope that it will not be too late by the time that you do. The concept, ladies and gentlemen, of apportionment is based upon our founding principle of equality under the law. The graduated income tax is unconstitutional, illegal, and is Marxist in its origin. It is designed to destroy this nation, and in particular, what the communists call the bourgeoisie, or the middle class. It is also designed to cause class wars, leading to a state of chaos from which those manipulating all you little sheeple can step up and restore the order that you will beg for once this state of chaos occurs. And it's coming, I guarantee you. You must form your militia units. You must understand the real law. You must regain your sovereign status. You must be able, with your militia units, to maintain political and military control of your local area when all the bullshit hits the fan. And it could be as early as this fall. Real property is real estate. Real property is real estate. Personal property, according to the Federal Bankruptcy Code, is personal belongings, including money and earnings. Compensation, therefore, is personal property. Also, the Supreme Court has ruled that our rights are property and our labor is our most sacred and inviolable property because it is the original foundation of all other property. If compensation for labor could be taxed, it would have taxed by equal apportionment. However, the Supreme Court has ruled that rights can never be taxed. A charge or a fee can never be imposed upon the exercise of a right. Income taxes can only be imposed upon regulated revenue, taxable activities, and privileges. The only taxes Congress is authorized to impose, ladies and gentlemen, without apportionment, are indirect taxes such as excises, duties, and imposts. The authority for indirect taxation by Congress is as follows. Note it and read it in your copy of the Constitution. And if you don't have a copy of the Constitution, turn off your radio. Go to bed, pull the covers up over your head, for you are already a slave. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, quote, "The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States, but all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States."
Songs come with a sound, sweet potato pie and a shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind, ain't nobody looking back again.
we all...
But we were so poor that we couldn't tell. Cotton was short and the weeds were tall. But Mr. Roosevelt was gonna save us all. Mama got sick and Daddy got down. The county got the farm and they moved to town. Papa got a job with a TV, yeah. He bought a washing machine and then a Chevrolet. Sing it.
Song, song of the South. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again.
Lied to, ladies and gentlemen. You were told that the crime committed, which began the Civil War, was the secession of the several states from the Union. That is a lie, for nothing happened when the states seceded from the Union. What they did was legal. It was okay, and you can still do it today. And I would advise you to, just as quick as possible. You see, what started the Civil War was not the secession of the states from the Union, but the stupidity of those who fired upon Fort Sumter before an agreement could be worked out for the Union troops to leave it with their equipment and stores and return to the North. When are you going to wake up? When are you going to stop watching the big eye of Big Brother in your living room? When are you going to regain the power of original thought that God gave you? When are you going to wake up? When are you going to stand on your own two feet and shed that cloak of wool? When are you going to stop following the Judas goat into the stalls to be sheared? And from there, to the feeding pens where you will be fattened for the slaughter. When? Excises are taxes laid upon the manufacture, sale, or consumption of commodities within the country, upon licenses to pursue certain regulated occupations, and upon corporate privileges. The requirement to pay such taxes involves the exercise of privilege. Unquote. Flint versus Stone, Tracy Company, 220, United States Supreme Court Decision 107. The income tax, ladies and gentlemen, can only be imposed upon the exercise of a privilege. It may not be imposed upon the exercise of a right. Flint versus Stone, Tracy also instructs us that indirect taxes are never upon any kind of property, money, or otherwise, but only upon taxable activities in which the resulting income is simply and conveniently used as the yardstick by which the tax on the activity is measured. Quote, conceding the power of Congress to tax the business activities of private corporations, the tax must be measured by some standard. It is therefore well settled by the decisions of this court that when the sovereign authority has exercised the right to tax a legitimate subject of taxation as an exercise of a franchise or privilege, it is no objection that the measure of taxation is found in the income, unquote. Clint versus Stone, Tracy Company, 220, United States Supreme Court Decision 107 at page 154 and 165. What it means is that when you incorporate and form an artificial person, you're exercising a privilege granted by the government, and therefore the income can be taxed, but not a sovereign citizen who has creator-endowed rights. Do you understand? The terms excise tax and privilege tax are synonymous. The two are often used interchangeably. American Airways versus Wallace, 57 F, 2nd, 877 and 880. Quote, the conclusion reached in the Pollock case recognized the fact that taxation on income was, in its nature, an excise, entitled to be enforced as such, unquote. Brushaber versus Union Pacific Railroad Company, 240, United States Supreme Court Decision 1, 16 and 17. Therefore, the income tax is an excise tax on the exercise of a privilege, and the amount of such tax is measured by the amount of income derived from the exercise of that privilege. A privilege is something that can be given and taken away by the government. If there is no privilege being exercised, there is no liability for the income tax. As previously documented, the authority to tax is applicable only on the exercise of a privilege. The privilege creates an indebtedness to the grantor for the benefits received by the privilege. Remember what I told you about socialists and daddy? Remember what I told you about growing up and becoming free and responsible? And remember what I told you what happens when you go back home to daddy and receive the benefits of eating at his table, sleeping under his roof in his bed? Do you want to be a child? Or do you want to be a sovereign, responsible, free adult? A lot of people in this country call themselves adults. They're not adults at all. They're little children, little bitty children, crying out to daddy to take care of them. Give me security. Give me a job. Feed me. Protect me. As we have previously documented, the authority to tax is applicable only on the exercise of a privilege. The privilege creates an indebtedness to the grantor for the benefits received by the privilege. However, since the only grantor of fundamental rights is God and he doesn't impose taxes, there can be no taxation on the exercise of a fundamental right. And that's why the socialists, when they were interviewing judge for the Supreme Court position, you all know who I'm talking about, the one with the hairs and the Coke can, they made it a point to state that they did not want to hear anything about nature's God. If there is no nature's God, there are no creator-endowed rights. Judge Thomas is a good man who believes in nature's God. He believes in creator-endowed rights, and so they tried to destroy him. They were not successful, simply because Anita Hill was not credible and was later proved to be a liar. Rights, ladies and gentlemen, cannot be converted into taxable privileges. contrary to what the government would like us to believe by the very definition of the word unalienable. Rights are incapable of being alienated, surrendered, transferred, or exchanged even by the holder of that right. The fact that our rights are unalienable restricts the government from converting them into privileges for the purpose of imposing a tax upon them. Quote, 26 RCL, Section 132, Taxation. A right common in every citizen, such as the right to own property, or to engage in business of a character not requiring regulation, cannot, however, be taxed as a special franchise by first prohibiting its exercise and then permitting its enjoyment upon the payment of a certain sum of money. Unquote. Stevens versus State, 2, Arkansas, 291-35. Amdeck, 72, Spring Val Waterworks versus Barber, 99, Cal, 36-33. Pax, 735. Comma 21 LRA 416, note 57 LRA 416. You see, folks, this is the only program you will ever listen to that gives you the source and challenges you to prove us wrong. And at the same time, we tell you to listen to everyone, read everything, believe nothing unless you can prove it in your own right. We are the last bastion of free speech and truth on the airwaves in the world. I challenge you to prove that statement wrong. Even in commercial law, there must be financial consideration before there is a financial liability. In other words, a contract. The individual, unlike the corporation, cannot be taxed for the mere privilege of existing. Quote, the individual, unlike the corporation, cannot be taxed for the mere privilege of existing. The corporation is an artificial entity which owes its existence and charter powers to the state. But the individual's right to live and own property are natural rights for the enjoyment of which an excise cannot be imposed. We believe that the conclusion is well justified, that a tax laid directly upon the income of property, real or personal, may well be regarded as a tax upon the property which produces the income, unquote. Redfield versus Fisher. Or except 292 at 813, 817, 819, 1930. Quote, citizens under our Constitution and laws means free inhabitants, not subjects. Every citizen and free man is endowed with certain rights and privileges to enjoy which no written law or statute is required. These are fundamental or natural rights recognized among all free people, that the right to accept employment as a laborer for hire as a fundamental right is inherent in every free citizen and is indisputable, unquote. United States versus Morris, 125 F, Report 325 and 331. Quote, the right to enjoy property without unlawful deprivation is a personal right, whether the property in question is a welfare check, a home, or a savings account. In fact, a fundamental interdependence exists between the person's right to liberty and the personal right in property. Neither could have meaning without the other. Unquote. Lynch versus Household Finance Corporation, 405 United States Supreme Court ruling, 538-1970. And that's why you have heard me say on this program that without property rights, there are no human rights. There are no rights at all. For the fundamental right is to the right of property. And when I made a statement one night when reading the Declaration of Independence, and I read the particular part of the right to life, liberty, and happiness, I made the statement that happiness should have been property. For without the right to property, there can be no happiness. Several people called in and said I was wrong. No, I was right. The original draft said property. Our forefathers talked about the right to life, liberty, and property. They said it over and over and over again. It was Thomas Jefferson a member of the Illuminati, a man who wrote his own Bible because he did not like the one that existed, changed it to read happiness. In fact, he wrote the final version of the Declaration of Independence. George Washington did not chop down a cherry tree. He was not asked if he did it. And he did not say, "I cannot tell a lie. Yes, Father, I chopped down the cherry tree. It was a lie." You've been living with lies most of your life. And all of these lies take you farther and farther away from the truth. No matter how much the truth hurts, no matter how much you abhor the truth, no matter how much you don't want to hear the truth, no matter how responsible it makes you, no matter how miserable it makes you, the truth is the truth. There's only one way to live our lives and be free and understand this world about us and how we fit into this world and what happens to us, and that is to live our lives by the truth. If we are to have any impact upon the future, if we are to remain free, it must be because we know the truth. We live our lives by the truth. We are dedicated to the truth. We are prepared to lose our fortunes and our lives in support of the truth. And as our forefathers did, we must be willing to pledge our sacred honor toward that end. We are the only people in the world who've ever enjoyed the total sum efforts of all who have gone before us upon this whole world. The only people who have ever been free, sovereign kings in their own right, not owned by anyone. And I want to know, why are you so eager to cast aside your crowns for the chains of slavery? Why? I want to know why. Why are you rushing headlong toward the cliff with the rest of the lemmings? Why are you following the Judas goat into the slaughterhouse? Why are you giving up the best that man has ever created? Why are you so eager to turn your head from the truth? Could it be as simple as this? Are you so afraid of being responsible? Of risking all on your own efforts? Of doing an honest day's work? Of setting something aside to prepare for your old age? Help your children get a foothold in this world? That you would sell everything down the tubes for the promise of a little comfort and security, false and phony though it may be? Is that really what it's all about? Is it that simple, or is it more complicated than that? Is it because you never knew any of these things? Is it because you were too stupid to even look and try and find out? That you just blindly believed and did what you were told? Is that all that there is to it? Is that the answer? I can tell you a fact, ladies and gentlemen, I've never told you before, and maybe you have never considered. Satan does not exist in the natural world. He is not there. If you take man out of nature, nature functions according to the laws of God with no intervention from Satan or the devil or any evil force. Everything works according to set rules, the rules laid down by our Creator, the way that things are supposed to work. A very famous man once said, "The kingdom of heaven is within you." And I may not be a very famous man, but I also say, Satan is within you also. For without man, Satan does not exist. All that there is, all of the questions and all of the answers, and the battlefield is within each and every one of you. If there is a Satan, he is within you. For he does not exist in the natural state. Could that be what is meant by the fall of man? Is the fall of man and the casting out of heaven of Lucifer one and the same? I don't know the answer to that. I don't pretend to. But I'll tell you this, none of you out there do either. No matter what you think you know. I've learned something in my life, ladies and gentlemen, is that the more I learn, the less I know, and the more questions there are that have to be answered. And I've reached the conclusion that I will not live long enough to even answer some of the most simple questions that I so long for the answers to. Citizens, ladies and gentlemen, under our Constitution and laws mean free inhabitants, not subjects. The right to enjoy property without unlawful deprivation is a personal right. These rights are endowed by our Creator. We have the right to work, to earn money, to build a home, to raise a family. To live in peace as a sovereign. The sovereignty is vested in us as long as we do not interfere with the sovereignty of any other. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. See, our forefathers set this country up according to the royal law. How many of you ever understood that? That Jesus Christ, and before him, God, when he handed the Ten Commandments to Moses upon the mountain, laid the foundation for the United States of America. Is that the reason why the socialists are so eager to take the Ten Commandments out of our schools, out of our homes, out of public buildings? For basically, it is the whole of the law. Everything is based upon it. It is the foundation, cornerstone of this country. Our forefathers did something that no one else had ever done in the history of the world. They said, there is a God. There is a God, and this God has given man certain unalienable rights. And everything else was based upon that statement. James chapter 2, verse 8 says, quote, if ye fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, ye do well, unquote. Matthew chapter 7, verse 12, I quote, therefore all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them. This is the law, unquote. Matthew chapter 22, verses 36 through 40 say, quote, Master, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus said to him, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law. And upon those two commandments, this nation was founded. And upon those two commandments, without any doubt, hang all the law. Good night, and God bless you all.
tree.